Okay, as you may have noticed, the theme today is sarcoidosis. So our second speaker is Dr. Hisham Fakhreddin from AUV, who is going to be presenting his paper.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to be a speaker in this journal club. Today I will be presenting an article published in JAMA 2013 entitled "An Endoscopy versus Conventional Bronchoscopy for Diagnosis of Sarcoidosis," or what's known as a granuloma study. Before going to this study, as you know, tissue verification of non-caseating granuloma is recommended for diagnosis of sarcoidosis, and TBLB is the current diagnostic standard as per the ATS-ERS and the WASC statement. However, this TBLB has a limited yield of around 60%, reported from 40 to 90% even when combined with endobronchial biopsy. On the other side, when EOS or EBUS-guided TBNA has higher yield, reaching 18%. But however, these two modalities have never been compared head-to-head in a well-designed study until the granuloma study. So this is a multi-center, unblinded, randomized clinical trial that included 14 university hospitals in 6 European countries. The primary objective was to evaluate the diagnostic yield of bronchoscopy plus TBNA versus endosonography guided TBNA in the diagnosis of mainly stage 1 and stage 2 sarcoidosis. Patients were included if their age is more than 18, if there has clinical or radiological suspicion of sarcoidosis, and there is an indication for tissue verification of non-caseating granuloma. Exclusion criteria were mainly if there is a presence of any obvious organ involvement that allow biopsy in a non-less invasive procedure, for example, superficial lymph node or skin biopsies, Lafayette syndrome, or there is contraindication for endoscopy, or a pregnant female were excluded. Patients were randomized in one-to-one fashion into either bronchoscopy group, in which they underwent TBLB and endobronchial biopsy, or endosonography group, either EUS or EBUS-guided TBNA. All patients underwent a bronchoscopy from the bronchoalveolar lavage, mainly, preferably, from the right middle lobe and the lingula for better yield. In the endoscopy group, that's the bronchoscopy group, the patient at least underwent 4 TBLBs and had 4 endobronchial biopsies. Whereas in the endosonography group, choosing either EOS or EBUS-guided TBNA was left for the local investigator. All biopsies were evaluated by a local pathologist or cytologist, and the sample were also sent for acid fast, TB, fungal culture, and PCR. In addition, the bile fluid were sent for CD4-CD8 ratio that was assessed either by cytospin or flow cytometry analysis. If the patient, after the primary endoscopy, had no conclusive diagnosis, undergoing another technique to confirm diagnosis was optional. And the diagnosis of sarcoid was left for the treating physician according to the all available information, whether clinical, radiological, or result of the pathology, according to the ATS-ERS and the WASC criteria. All patients were followed up radiologically and clinically for 6 months to reassess diagnosis, and at that time, that after 6 months, the final diagnosis was considered as the reference diagnosis. The primary outcome was the detection of a granuloma or a cluster of epithelioid cells concordant with a granulomatous inflammation. And they calculate the yield at the number of patients with detected granuloma divided by the number of patients with final diagnosis of sarcoid at 6 months, multiplied by 100. The secondary outcome mainly was the rate of serious adverse event related to the procedure to which they were randomized, and the sensitivity and the specificity of BAL CD4, CD8 count. They chose a cutoff of 3.5 for diagnosis of sarcoidosis. Using the assumption that the bronchoscopy has a yield of 70% and endosonography of 85%, they calculated that they need a sample size of 300 patients and that a p-value of less than 0.05 was considered statistically significant. So let's see what happened. 366 patients were evaluated for the eligibility, and of these, 304 were randomized. 149 was randomized for TBLB and BAL and were all included in intention to diagnose analysis. Whereas 155 were randomized into the endosonography group. Of those, 154 were included in intention to diagnose analysis. One was excluded because he didn't underwent any procedure, either the bronchoscopy or endosonography. So here is the primary characteristic. As you can see, most of the population was middle age. They mainly are male, and the symptoms were mainly fatigue, cough, and dyspnea in all the population. And as for the stages of sarcoidosis, around 50-50 in each group were stage 1 and stage 2 sarcoidosis. There were no statistical significant difference between both groups as for baseline characteristics. Looking to the criteria, to the outcome, as you can see, the granuloma was detected in 48% of patients with underwent bronchoscopy, whereas it reached 74% undergoing endosonography, and the yield was 53% in the bronchoscopy group, whereas in the endosonography group was 80%. Again, to just remember that the yield was calculated as the number of patients with the granuloma divided by the number of at 6 months of follow-up. And both differences were statistically significant. In both groups, around 90% of the population were final diagnosed as sarcoidosis. If we look to the diagnostic yield according to the stages, as you can see, the yield of the endosonography in stage 1 almost doubled that of the stage 2, which was clinically significant, or statistically significant. Whereas for type 2, the endosonography group has better yield, but it was not clearly significant as for the bronchoscopy group. So, as the final diagnosis of sarcoid at 6 months, which was considered as the final diagnosis, 92% were diagnosed with sarcoid, almost equal in both groups. And of those 278 patients, 90% were diagnosed by tissue-improving granuloma. Okay, and the other 10% were diagnosed by clinical and radiological course. Looking here, so this is the slide. As you can see, all patients in both groups, in which a granuloma was detected tend to have a final diagnosis of sarcoidosis in both groups, whether in the endosonography or the bronchoscopy group. So all patients have sarcoidosis, indicating a specificity of 100% for diagnosis of sarcoidosis. However, for the sensitivity, if your patient underwent TBLB, you have the chance of missing 50%, around 50% of the granuloma of the year's patient. While if the patient underwent TBNA, you have a chance of missing around 20%. Regarding the BAL CT4 CD8 count as a cutoff of 3.5, in both techniques, whether flow cytometry or cytospin, they were quite specific, but the sensitivity was low. That indicates that a normal ratio does not rule out a sarcoidosis. Looking to the adverse event, which is one of the secondary outcome, as you can see, adverse event occur more frequently in the bronchoscopy group, which was clinically significant, with number needed to harm of 9. But look again, most of these adverse events were minor adverse events, and they all have all patients have recovered completely. Only 3 patients have underwent or have major adverse events like pneumothorax requiring drainage or a ventilatory insufficiency. At the risk of pneumothorax in the bronchoscopy group or the TBLB group, it was around 4%, which is the number reported in the literature for TBLB. So let's look more deep into this study. Let's first look to the for the population. As I've mentioned later or earlier, 50% of the patients with sarcoidosis were of the population in either group were stage 1, stage 2. And as you know, the staging of sarcoidosis is based on a chest X-ray and not on the CT finding. Looking again to the CT finding, the majority of patients in the bronchoscopy group and the endosonography group has pulmonary involvement. However, the investigator didn't adjust for this issue, this might is that they have adjusted for this issue the sensitivity or the yield of the bronchoscopy group in patients without a pulmonary infiltrate which might be a lower, and therefore the whole population, the whole yield of the bronchoscopy group will be even lower. Looking further to the design, randomization was done in a software specified by each center. There were no central randomization center, but an investigator were not blinded for the allocated group. Technically, it's impossible to blind these patients for or the investigator for the group, because due to different nature of the procedure and different type of instrument they tend to use. So it's technically it's impossible to blind the investigator. However, an important point which we would like to see, why conventional TBNA was excluded from the bronchoscopy group? Why we don't have TBLB, conventional TBNA versus EBUS TBNA? Especially that in 2012, a meta-analysis showed that the yield of conventional TBNA, 62%, increased up to 83% when combined with TBLB, which is comparable to the yield of the endosonography group in the granuloma study, which is reaching around 80%. And by 2013, that's when that granuloma study was published, one randomized study, which was small, has shown that the conventional TBNA, conventional TBNA and EBUS TBNA, showed that EBUS TBNA had a superior. However, a possible cause that the investigator chose to exclude conventional TBA because the guideline by that time they recommend a TBLB as the gold standard for diagnosis. And when you need to introduce a new modality of diagnosis, you need to compare it to the standard or the gold standard of the diagnosis. That's why they might have chosen only TBLB. As for detection of the granuloma, the selected as collected sample with unblinded were evaluated by unblinded local cytologists and pathologists. Again, this cannot be technically very difficult to be done because the different nature of the sample that's generated by each procedure, and even the different personnel will evaluate the sample. So technically, you cannot the assessment or the outcome assessment will be difficult to be blinded. However, what they did that at the end of the study, only around 95% of the sample were evaluated by a blinded pathologist and cytologist, and that show a high inter-observership agreement with a high kappa index, as you can see. Furthermore, if you look to the final diagnosis of sarcoidosis, a strength of this study that an investigator has been aware that the detection of an uncaseating granuloma is not equivalent to diagnosis of sarcoidosis. And that's why the patient has been followed for 6 months after the result of the pathology, regardless of the result of the pathology, to confirm that they have they didn't show any sign of different diseases. However, the final diagnosis of the sarcoid was left to the treating physician, which is aware of the result of the pathology, and this might have generated what is known as the risk of incorporation bias. Incorporation bias occurs when you know the result of the pathology, you will become more inclined to call the diagnosis, to make the cold diagnosis of sarcoidosis, and that appears that the yield of the procedure will be higher. Another important point, this study has been done in a European country in which the prevalence of sarcoidosis in patients with high-level adenopathy is reaching 80%. In other societies, like in patients in areas where TB is endemic, histoplasmosis is endemic, this is the yield of the study might not be as high as what is seen in this study. And this seems to be investigated in areas where other granulomatous disease is more endemic. Finishing with the stages of sarcoid, as I have mentioned that in stage 1 sarcoidosis, the endosonography group performed better than the bronchoscopy group, but not in stage 2. However, be aware that the study is not powered enough to detect this difference. This needs to be further investigated in a more dedicated study. Finishing to my involved point, since as a pulmonologist, you might be more interested if a procedure that you do, like EBUS TBNA, has better yield than TBLB. As you can see, in the endosonography group, more patients underwent US TBNA rather than EBUS TBNA in this study. And in the European country, most of the study, the gastroenterologists, the pulmonologists always do can do EOS TBNA. Looking at actually, the EOS TBNA has a better performance than the EBUS TBNA, which was clinically significant. And then when we look to the EBUS versus TBNAB, the EBUS has better yield, but not clinically significant compared to TBNAB. But again, this is the study is not powered enough to compare the EBUS versus TBNAB. And the choosing EOS or EBUS is left to the, it was not specified by the protocol. So take-home message, among patients with suspected stage 1, stage 2 sarcoid and undergoing tissue confirmation, the use of AUS or EBUS-guided TBNA is superior to TBNB in the bronchial biopsy with fewer adverse events. However, the yield of the EBUS-TBNA versus TBNB needed to be further evaluated in a dedicated study, as well as the yield of these different procedures in different stages of sarcoidosis. And thank you.
So the floor is open for questions.
US patients, to the best of my knowledge, are not the idea for where sarcoid
is.
I mean, stages 2, 3, 7, those are all accessible by EBUS much more than the age.
Actually, the investigator did not mention which stages they have, which station they have aspirated. But since the EUS was more commonly aspirated, was commonly used than EBUS, we saw that the most common station was station 7, that was subcarinal. The subcarinal was the most commonly stationed to be. And that's why later on critics has objected why, since you have sampled the subcarinal lymph node, why you have didn't include the conventional TBNA in the bronchoscopy group, which can be easily sampled blindly by the conventional TBNA.
Thank you, Hisham.